Chapter 82. The massive C-130 transport plane was still ascending as it banked southeast, thundering out across the Adriatic. On board, Robert Langdon was feeling simultaneously cramped and adrift, oppressed by the absence of windows in the aircraft and bewildered by all of the unanswered questions swirling around in his brain. "Your medical condition," Sinsky had told him, "is a bit more complicated than a simple head wound." Langdon's pulse quickened at the thought of what she might tell him. And yet at the moment, she was busy discussing containment strategies with the SRS team. Bruder was on the phone nearby, speaking with government agencies about Sienna Brooks, following up on everyone's attempts to locate her.
Sienna.
Langdon was still trying to make sense of the claim that she was intricately involved in all of this. As the plane leveled out from its ascent, the small man who called himself the provost walked across the cabin and sat down opposite Langdon. He steepled his fingers beneath his chin and pursed his lips.
"Dr. Sinsky asked me to fill you in, make an attempt to bring clarity to your situation."
Langdon wondered what this man could possibly say to make any of this confusion even remotely clear.
"As I began to say earlier," the provost said, "much of this started after my agent, Vyantha, pulled you in prematurely. We had no idea how much progress you had made on Dr. Sinsky's behalf, or how much you had shared with her. But we were afraid if she learned the location of the project our client had hired us to protect, she was going to confiscate or destroy it. We had to find it before she did, and so we needed you to work on our behalf, rather than on Sinsky's."
The provost paused, tapping his fingertips together.
"Unfortunately, we had already shown our cards, and you most certainly did not trust us."
"So you shot me in the head?"
Langdon replied angrily.
"We came up with a plan to make you trust us."
Langdon felt lost.
"How do you make someone trust you after you've kidnapped and interrogated him?"
The man shifted uncomfortably now.
"Professor, are you familiar with the family of chemicals known as benzodiazepines?"
Langdon shook his head.
"They are a breed of pharmaceutical that are used for, among other things, the treatment of post-traumatic stress. As you may know, when someone endures a horrific event like a car accident or a sexual assault, the long-term memories can be permanently debilitating. Through the use of benzodiazepines, neuroscientists are now able to treat post-traumatic stress, as it were, before it happens."
Langdon listened in silence, unable to imagine where this conversation might be going.
"When new memories are formed," the provost continued, "those events are stored in your short-term memory for about 48 hours before they migrate to your long-term memory. Using new blends of benzodiazepines, one can easily refresh the short-term memory, essentially deleting its content before those recent memories migrate, so to speak, into long-term memories. A victim of assault, for example, if administered a benzodiazepine within a few hours after the attack, can have those memories expunged forever, and the trauma never becomes part of her psyche. The only downside is that she loses all recollection of several days of her life."
Langdon stared at the tiny man in disbelief.
"You gave me amnesia?"
The provost let out an apologetic sigh.
"I'm afraid so. Chemically induced, very safe, but yes, a deletion of your short-term memory."
He paused.
"While you were out, you mumbled something about a plague, which we assumed was on account of your viewing the projector images. We never imagined that Zobrist had created a real plague." He paused. "You also kept mumbling a phrase that sounded to us like, very sorry, very sorry."
"Vasari,"